Welcome back to the Crypto Daily, everyone. Today, we're diving deep into the institutional adoption of cryptocurrencies. Joining us is Ethan Block Venture, a seasoned crypto analyst and investor. Ethan, thrilled to have you here.
Thanks for having me, Ava. It's always a pleasure to discuss this exciting space.
So, Ethan, we've seen a seismic shift in how institutions view crypto. What's driving this change from skepticism to acceptance?
It's a confluence of factors, Ava. Regulatory clarity, for one. The SEC approving Bitcoin and Ethereum ETFs was a watershed moment, legitimizing crypto in the eyes of many institutions. Then there's the security aspect. Robust custodial services like Coinbase Custody have eased concerns about asset safety, a major hurdle for institutional investors.
And let's not forget client demand. High net worth individuals are increasingly interested in crypto, pushing institutions to adapt.
Absolutely. It's a demand-driven market, and institutions are responding. They're incorporating crypto into portfolios, offering crypto-related products, even partnering with crypto firms like PayPal did with Paxos. This integration of traditional finance with the crypto ecosystem is groundbreaking.
We're seeing the impact of this institutional influx already. Increased liquidity, reduced volatility, a more mature market overall. What does this mean for retail investors?
It's a positive sign, Ava. Institutional involvement brings stability and legitimacy, which benefits everyone. Plus, the products designed for institutional access, like ETFs, provide an easier, more regulated entry point for retail investors, too.
And it's not just Bitcoin and Ethereum. We have articles highlighting Aave, a DeFi protocol experiencing remarkable growth, and even predictions about Vitalik Buterin, the co-founder of Ethereum, as a potential Nobel Prize candidate. This space is truly dynamic.
Absolutely. Aave's success underscores the growing dominance of DeFi, and Vitalik's potential nomination speaks volumes about the impact of blockchain technology on the world stage. These aren't just speculative assets anymore. They're disrupting traditional finance and garnering global recognition.
We also have James Heckman, with his extensive experience in digital media, launching a decentralized media platform, The Roundtable. It aims to empower independent journalists and content creators, utilizing blockchain for content ownership and monetization.
It's a fascinating development, Ava. Decentralization isn't just about finance. It's about shifting power dynamics across sectors. Heckman's vision for a more equitable and transparent media landscape is quite compelling.
Let's dive into MicroStrategy, Ethan. They've gone all in on Bitcoin, haven't they?
Indeed, Ava. They're practically a Bitcoin proxy at this point. Their software business is almost secondary to their massive Bitcoin holdings.
And their stock performance reflects that, mirroring Bitcoin's price swings. But is it really a smart move to buy MicroStrategy stock over just buying Bitcoin directly?
That's the million-dollar question. There's definitely a premium on MSTR's net asset value compared to their Bitcoin holdings. You're essentially paying a markup for their Bitcoin bet.
So why do analysts remain bullish? The article mentions a strong buy consensus on Wall Street.
It comes down to leverage and market timing. MicroStrategy has been incredibly adept at issuing debt, particularly convertible bonds, to buy more Bitcoin. They're essentially leveraging up their Bitcoin bet.
And when Bitcoin rises, their stock benefits even more due to that leverage. It's a high-risk, high-reward strategy.
Precisely. And so far, it's paid off handsomely for them, outperforming both Bitcoin and the broader market since they started this strategy.
But we can't ignore the risks. The article highlights the volatility inherent in this approach. If Bitcoin enters another prolonged bear market, MicroStrategy's stock could get hammered.
Absolutely. It's not for the faint of heart. But for investors who are bullish on Bitcoin and comfortable with significant risk, MicroStrategy offers a potentially leveraged way to play the cryptocurrency's upside.
Speaking of Bitcoin's price, another article suggests a big move is brewing, potentially influenced by the Fed's interest rate decisions and the U.S. government's potential sale of seized Silk Road Bitcoin.
Yes, the market is in a state of anticipation. Further rate cuts by the Fed could weaken the dollar and make risk assets like Bitcoin more attractive. Conversely, a massive Bitcoin sale by the government could create downward pressure on price.
It's a fascinating tug of war. On one hand, we have macroeconomic factors potentially boosting Bitcoin. On the other, we have a potential supply shock looming.
And let's not forget the political angle. The article about Trump's stance on crypto adds another layer of complexity.
It's interesting how he seemingly flipped his stance, now promising to make the U.S. the crypto capital of the world if elected. Though, as Scaramucci pointed out, his involvement could be a double-edged sword, potentially hindering bipartisan support for the industry.
Indeed, crypto's future in the U.S. might hinge on navigating this political divide and finding common ground for sensible regulation.
It's interesting to see these stablecoin developments, particularly with native USDC, coming to SUI through Navi protocol. What are your thoughts, Ethan, on the significance of this for the SUI ecosystem?
This is a big deal, Ava. Native USDC means increased capital efficiency and a smoother user experience. Remember, SUI is still relatively new, so having a major stablecoin like USDC natively integrated lends it credibility and attracts developers.
Absolutely. And the fact that Navi is launching with a suite of features around native USDC, like liquidity pools and flash loans, shows they're serious about making it a core part of the ecosystem.
Definitely. And the emphasis on CCTP, the cross-chain transfer protocol, is important too. This could be a game changer for blockchain efficiency, eliminating the delays we often see with bridge withdrawals.
Speaking of efficiency, the article about Lyft Dollar, or USDL, launching on Arbitrum caught my eye. Yield-bearing stablecoins are gaining traction, and this one claims to offer daily yield payouts from U.S. Treasury holdings.
It's a compelling proposition, especially in a market hungry for yield. The regulatory oversight from ADGM is also noteworthy, as it could alleviate some concerns about transparency and security.
Right? And the fact that it's launching on Arbitrum, a layer 2 scaling solution for Ethereum, speaks to the demand for faster and more cost-effective transactions within the DeFi space.
Absolutely. Arbitrum has seen explosive growth, and having a regulated, yield-bearing stablecoin like USDL could further solidify its position as a DeFi hub.
Now, let's shift gears to Agora's decision to use Wormhole as its core interoperability solution for the AUSD stablecoin. What's your take on this partnership?
Interoperability is crucial for stablecoin adoption, and Wormhole has emerged as a leading player in this space. By leveraging Wormhole's NTT framework, Agora can unify AUSD liquidity across multiple chains, making it more accessible and useful for users.
It's interesting how they highlight the benefits of NTT, like reduced fragmentation, enhanced transparency, and lower transaction costs. These are all critical factors for stablecoins, which are meant to be efficient mediums of exchange.
Precisely. And the fact that AUSD is expanding to Solana soon, another major blockchain, shows their commitment to cross-chain compatibility.
Speaking of empowering users, let's dive into Rewardable, a task-to-earn platform generating quite a buzz for its Gen Z appeal. Ethan, how is this platform reshaping the gig economy for the younger generation?
It's fascinating to see how Rewardable taps into Gen Z's desire for flexibility and digital-first income. Unlike traditional gig platforms, Rewardable leverages blockchain and offers micro-tasks that are easily accessible, removing barriers like geographic restrictions and high competition.
So it's like bringing the gig economy to Web3, making it more inclusive and aligned with how Gen Z operates in the digital world.
Exactly. And the use of reward tokens for compensation adds another layer of transparency and borderless transactions, which resonates with Gen Z's preference for decentralized systems.
It's interesting how Rewardable incentivizes consistent engagement without solely focusing on top performers. This approach seems more sustainable and encourages broader participation.
Absolutely. It fosters a sense of community and rewards effort over sheer output, which can be particularly appealing to a generation seeking a better work-life balance.
So Ethan, Tron DAO has been making waves with its Tron Builder Tour. This time, they landed at Columbia University. Tell us more about this initiative and why it's creating such a buzz.
This isn't just another university tour, Ava. Tron DAO is strategically partnering with top-tier institutions like Columbia and previously MIT, Cornell, and Harvard to bridge the gap between academia and the blockchain industry. It's about fostering the next generation of developers.
And they're doing this through hackathons. That sounds intense.
Absolutely. The Columbia event saw over 120 students, even from universities like Harvard and NYU, diving deep into the Tron blockchain for 12 hours straight. They weren't alone, though. Tron brought in seasoned developers like Dwayne Gordon and Tron's super representative, Eder Teixeira, to mentor these aspiring builders.
That's impressive. Having access to experienced mentors can be invaluable in such a competitive field. What kind of projects were these students building?
The hackathon was divided into four tracks: DeFi, artistry, integration, and Web3. This allowed participants to explore diverse applications of blockchain technology, from decentralized finance to NFT-powered art.
It seems like Tron DAO is really pushing for holistic blockchain adoption, not just focusing on one aspect.
Precisely. And they're not stopping there. They've also launched Hackatron Season 7, a global competition encouraging even more innovation on the Tron blockchain. It's clear they're playing the long game, investing in education and development to build a robust ecosystem.
So Ethan, Solana's been making headlines again. This time it's about hitting a new all-time high of over 100 million monthly active wallets. That sounds impressive, but then you dig a little deeper and find that most of these wallets are empty. What's going on here?
It's a classic case of don't judge a book by its cover, Ava. While the raw number might seem promising, the lack of actual SOL holdings in these wallets raises some serious red flags. Some analysts are suggesting that this surge could be attributed to bots, potentially inflating the network's activity metrics.
That's interesting. We've seen similar accusations leveled at Solana before. What evidence is there to support this bot activity claim?
Well, data from Hello Moon shows that a staggering 86 million users held zero SOL in their wallets over the past month. Add to that the fact that the increase in active wallets coincides with a spike in new account creation and token issuance on the network, and it starts to paint a picture.
It's almost as if there's an orchestrated effort to make it seem like there's more user engagement than there actually is. But why go through all this trouble? What's the incentive for inflating these numbers?
It could be a way to attract investors and developers, creating a perception of growth and activity. A higher active user count often translates to a higher perceived value of the network, which can influence investment decisions. However, it's crucial to remember that this is just one interpretation of the data. There could be other explanations for this phenomenon.
Right. It's important to consider all sides. Solana argues that even bot transactions have value since they still contribute to network fees. They claim this fee mechanism is essential for managing their long-term inflation goals.
That's true. But it also highlights the double-edged sword of Solana's efficiency. The low fees and high transaction speeds that make it attractive for legitimate users also make it a playground for bots. It's a challenge that Solana will need to address if they want to shake off these criticisms and gain wider adoption.
Speaking of navigating the complexities of Web3, we have some exciting news from Fuse. They just announced Charge, the first Web3 merchant bank with a suite of payment solutions for both crypto and fiat. Ethan, what's your take on this development? Is this the breakthrough Web3 commerce has been waiting for?
It's definitely a significant step, Ava. We've seen a lot of buzz around Web3 payments, but the reality is high fees and usability issues have been major roadblocks. Charge seems to address these head-on with its low 0.5% transaction fees and seamless integration with fiat systems.
And the fact that it's non-custodial is huge. Businesses can leverage the benefits of blockchain without relinquishing control of their assets. That's a game changer for trust and security.
Absolutely. Plus, by targeting SMBs, Fuse is tapping into a massive market segment that's been underserved in the Web3 space. Think about all those crypto startups and e-commerce platforms struggling to navigate traditional financial systems. Charge offers them a streamlined, blockchain-native solution.
It's almost like Fuse is building the financial plumbing for Web3, enabling businesses to operate seamlessly between the traditional and decentralized worlds. But what about adoption? Will businesses actually embrace this new model?
Well, the demand is certainly there. Reports show over 60% of businesses are open to accepting crypto payments if the process is simplified. Charge's user-friendly platform and robust API support make integration relatively straightforward. Of course, there will be challenges, but this feels like a watershed moment for Web3 commerce.
So, Ethan, We've been talking about the potential of decentralized AI, and this Blue Whale project has certainly caught my eye. They're aiming to tap into the massive processing power of smartphones to create a distributed AI network. Ambitious, to say the least.
It's a fascinating concept, Ava. We carry around these incredibly powerful devices in our pockets, yet most of their computational capacity sits idle most of the time. Blue Whale wants to harness that unused power and put it to work for AI tasks.
And they're doing it through a node sale, which is interesting. Users can stake their Blue Eye tokens to operate these master nodes on their phones and earn passive income. It's like mining, but instead of energy-intensive hardware, you're contributing your phone's processing power.
Right, and that's a key distinction. One of the biggest criticisms of traditional crypto mining is its environmental impact. Blue Whale's approach is much more energy efficient since it's leveraging existing hardware that's already drawing power.
It's also tapping into a massive potential user base. There are billions of smartphones out there, and if Blue Whale can even capture a small fraction of that, they could have a truly decentralized network on their hands.
That's the dream, isn't it? A decentralized AI network that's not controlled by any one entity. But it's still early days. The success of this project hinges on user adoption and their ability to attract developers who can build on their platform.
Absolutely. And they'll need to address privacy concerns head on. Users will want to know exactly what data their phones are contributing and how it's being used.
That's paramount in any Web3 project, but especially one dealing with personal data. Transparency and user control are non-negotiable. But if Blue Whale can pull this off, it could be a game changer for decentralized AI.
So, Ethan, we're seeing interesting developments in the meme coin space. Pepecoin, the OG itself, is making a move that seems to go beyond just memes.
Yeah, this burn event is a pretty big deal. It's not just about reducing supply and potentially pumping the price. It's about tying Pepecoin directly to a utility, in this case, the BaseDAI network.
Right, and it's a clever way to do it. By allowing holders to burn their Pepecoin for brain credits, which can then be used on the BaseDAI network, they're essentially creating a bridge between these two ecosystems.
It's a smart way to incentivize participation in both. Holders who believe in the potential of BaseDAI are encouraged to burn their Pepecoin, which increases the scarcity and potential value of the remaining tokens. It's a win-win, at least in theory.
But it also raises questions about the long-term viability of both projects. Can Pepecoin, a meme coin at its core, successfully transition into a utility token? And can BaseDAI, a relatively new player in the decentralized AI space, gain enough traction to justify this integration?
Those are the million-dollar questions, aren't they? It's a gamble for both sides. But I have to say, the idea of a decentralized AI network powered by a meme coin is intriguing, to say the least.
It's definitely one to watch. If this works, it could be a blueprint for other meme coins looking to evolve beyond their meme status. But if it fails, it could be a cautionary tale about the perils of overreaching. And finally, let's talk about Unitronics Corp. They're making some bold moves in the crypto space, wouldn't you say, Ethan?
Absolutely, Ava. Unitronics' share buyback program and their decision to reduce authorized shares are certainly turning heads. It's a clear signal to the market that they're confident in their direction, particularly their cryptocurrency investment portfolio strategy.
It's a significant buyback, too, aiming for up to 100 million shares. They've already repurchased and canceled 23 million. That's a strong start. And reducing authorized shares by 75% is a pretty big deal.
It is. By reducing the number of outstanding shares, they can potentially increase earnings per share and make the remaining shares more attractive to investors. It's a classic way to boost shareholder value, but the twist here is that they're tying it directly to their crypto investments.
It's a bold move, putting so much emphasis on their crypto strategy. It suggests they believe this is where their future growth lies. But it's also a risky one. Cryptocurrency is still a volatile market, and there's no guarantee their investments will pay off.
That's the billion-dollar question, isn't it? Are they visionaries, or are they taking a gamble on a bubble? Only time will tell. But you have to admire their boldness. It's a refreshing change from the cautious approach we often see from publicly traded companies in this space.
It's definitely a story we'll be following closely. Well, that wraps up another episode of Crypto Daily. We dove deep into the evolving world of meme coins, explored the potential of decentralized AI, and examined Unitronix's bold bet on the future of crypto. As always, stay informed, stay engaged, and we'll see you next time.